You're listening to a special episode of the AW360 Live podcast, recorded ahead of the 16th edition of Advertising Week New York. I'm Richard Larson, Senior Vice President of AW360 at Advertising Week, and today my guest is Paul Wolmington, CEO of Canvas Worldwide. Paul will be hosting a panel at Advertising Week on Thursday, September 26th, called Disruptors and Provocateurs, Redefining the Medium as the Message for the 21st Century. In our conversation, Paul and I discuss everything from the modern burdens of having too much choice in the digital age, to the ever-increasing impatience of consumers, to marketing's next battleground, empowered technology. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
Thank you so much. I think the thesis is, how do you redefine the medium as the message? And that was a radical concept when Marshall McLuhan came up with it in the 70s. And, you know, how do we define it today? And I was thinking through that ultimately solving problems is the ultimate medium, and then communicating how you solve that problem. So that was the first thought. And what then sat underneath it was, I thought, well, it's interesting. One aspect of solving problems is empowering technology. So as opposed to just technology, which I think is, you know, adding the word empowering technology felt like it spoke to the issue of there was a before and then there was an after. And the after was better than the before for the consumer experience. For literally, there was an impediment, or there might have been a clunkier journey that that customer was on, you know, to a purchase or to, you know, to anything, to you know, being entertained, informed, getting a service. And the empowering technology facilitates a better experience. It facilitates the aha moment. And I think we all remember the first time that we powered up Waze, and I literally, my head exploded, and I thought, this is amazing. The first time that I used, you know, an app to photograph a wine label, and then it would give me not only where I could buy it, but every kind of descriptor. So I didn't have to just rely on, you know, Wine Spectator label hanging off the shelf in the package store. So it was, you know, we all have our examples of them. And that's what I kind of consider to be an empowering technology.
When I look at the various technologies available to me, I'm almost sort of personally overwhelmed by how many there are. And for all of those aha moments, as I reflect back, you know, over just the, you know, let's just call it a decade plus of heavy mobile app usage and all the fancy things that have kind of come my way, for all of those aha moments, I feel like personally I've distilled that down to just like a core dozen or less that I'm using on a regular basis. I'm not sure if other people sort of experience that themselves. I have a feeling they do too, you know, more or less. How do we sort of determine which of those experiences really end up, I don't want to say mattering, because I'm sure different things matter to different people, but how do we sort of choose where to put emphasis moving forward?
Human behavior is changing, but some of the fundamentals which you mention remain the same. We have somewhat limited capacity to regularly embrace, habitually embrace anything. And this is well documented in a wonderful book called The Paradox of Choice. Historically, living in a 500 TV channel universe, we knew that there were approximately 8 TV channels that you went to. And now we live in a 500 platform universe and technology universe. And I think the same is true we all have, I can scroll through tens and dozens of apps on my iPhone, but there are a distinct number that I go to. Now, I do swap in and out, but I think that the ability for a piece of technology to magically become a part of your life really depends on it solving your problems or being so magical as opposed to being a gimmick. And this leads me to another thesis, which is that what is absolutely guaranteed in technology is that technology will die. I mean, by the very nature of progress, breaking through new frontiers, it means that technology will die. But what won't die is great ideas. So the human factor that can create something magical as opposed to we're creating it. And I think that was the same of advertising. So if you were to, most advertising doesn't work. Most advertising, I mean, depending on what criteria you use, obviously, but most advertising is incredibly wasted, but that's true of almost any industry. The stuff that really, really works is that, you know, the cream at the top of the milk. And similarly, I think in applications, technology, platforms, you know, the cream is rarer, but often as not, it has not just, it's brilliantly intuitive, it's, you know, UX is amazing or whatever. It actually has a fundamental idea that solves a problem or did something that hitherto now others didn't, in a way where you go, I want that to be a part of my life. You know, I can't live without it.
So in this sort of shift of, you know, the medium is the message, what can now be defined as a medium? I mean, is it purely platforms, or is it sort of our interactions with them, or both? Or is it the underlying technology behind that?
Yeah, I'm still on this journey to that answer, and I think the journey is the most interesting part, and you know I think there are several answers to that question, but let me just back up a bit. Approximately 10 years ago, two-thirds of communications were largely controlled by brands. We obviously still had a very, very vibrant push to the consumer media marketplace, communications marketplace. Today we have the reverse. Two-thirds of communications is controlled by consumers. Consumer reports, how-tos, social platforms, search, etc., etc., has really changed the dynamic. And I think in that context, we have to beg the question, and let alone, you know, ad blockers and, bots that are, you know, infiltrating sometimes nefariously, our discourse, the truth, 100 other topics. But keeping on topic, in that context, we have to think smarter about what communication really is and how brands. So I think part of this thesis is that innovation needs to be on steroids today, and providing kind of great services have become a medium. And then you support walking the walk. So another phrase would be walk the walk, don't just talk the talk. So yes, advertising is still important. Brand messaging through TV commercials are important. But in a world where two-thirds of consumers of communications is controlled by the consumer, we have to do much more than that. And it's not just social media and things like that. We as brands and as marketeers and as businesses need to create better experiences. And by creating those better experiences, we promote the better experience. And then you've got a win-win, you know, because ultimately, you know, brands need to be in service of solving problems in order to, build that engagement. I can give you some examples. we at Canvas were very involved in with Hyundai. Hyundai is a challenger OEM, automotive manufacturer. And we all know that the car buying experience isn't optimal. You know, we know that there are fewer people visiting dealerships. If you were to ask me the question, you know, would I enjoy going to a dealership? No, probably not. My perception of dealership is you know, it hassle. And so we created a partnership with Amazon. So we came up with an idea with Amazon where we would be the first auto manufacturer to embed kind of data with their data in their Amazon Prime platform in order to identify in-market buyers. And then essentially, we through Amazon Prime were able to communicate with consumers that we would deliver a car when and where the customer wanted in order for them to do a test drive. And it solved a problem. And the response, so we tested this in California, and the response was off the Richter scale. I mean, people just couldn't believe that there was an auto manufacturer that was, you know, that someone would say, well, I'm going to drop off my kids at school. Why don't you meet me back at my home at, you know, 10:30? You know, I've got a kind of hour and a half between, you know, 10:30 and 12 o'clock. And, you know, hey, presto, you know, we delivered pretty much per the guarantee of Amazon Prime. But even that association, so that was the medium became the message. Insofar as we were obviously promoting this test drive on your time, you know, Prime Now, Drive Now was how we branded the service. And to my way of thinking, that was just an illustration of what we're talking about. That was solving a problem. It was obviously using, you know, a platform partner. It was an association with a brand that has incredible trust in delivery. And, you know, the results from it were kind of magical. You know, consumers were surprised, delighted, and their brand perception went through the roof. But also, I think just the, you know, it points to a future where that car could still be bought through the dealership. So that emphasis, it can still be bought through the dealership. But that kind of that second to last step, which would be the test drive, is still key for many auto manufacturers. So that's a good example. I think another example would be, you know, Domino's. Domino's isn't a pizza company. I don't know what they're a delivery company. They're a technology company. And I think they've done an amazing job of infiltrating every platform. You can essentially, firstly, purchase a pizza, a Domino's pizza on almost every, you can even send an emoji of a pizza, a Domino's pizza. And that the emoji is the way in which you actually can create the order. But on every social media platform, they've infiltrated it in a way that's intuitive to that platform in order for people to order a pizza. But the second thing, I think the other part of it is that, you know, they've prided themselves on being the delivery company, you know, whether it's, you know, we'll give you a free pizza if we don't deliver in 30 minutes. But they went even further than that. It's if the pizza isn't delivered in its, you know, the form that you expect it, then we'll send you another one. And that led to then, you know, obviously the idea that they're going to deliver pizzas by drone, which is an interesting concept. So we have an arms race in obviously delivery. But I think actually then a twist on it was the communication. I think this is fiendishly brilliant, the creative idea. So the creative idea that potholes are the enemy of delivery, are the enemy of the consumer and Domino's. Because if you think of, ultimately, you've still got to physically deliver this thing. You can't, you know, We don't live in a Star Trek world where we'll be able to beam the pizza across. Although I'm sure Domino's are working on that, but I like the idea that, you know, the potholes. So if you report a pothole in your neighborhood, you know, we will come and we'll fill the pothole. But I thought it was a metaphor. It was a wonderful metaphor for obviously them owning this big idea, you know, emotionally as well as physically. I mean, the physical ownership can be, we're going to deliver faster than anyone else, and you can order faster than anyone else. But I think the emotional part of it was, you know, this idea that potholes were this kind of the enemy of the perfect pizza. I love it. So I think it took the communication two steps further. But it speaks again to this notion of, you know, what is the medium today and then what is the message? And it feels like it's very intertwined, this notion of, the speed and the intuitive nature of how you can actually order, but also the how proud they are on being a technology innovator in the way that they can deliver. And then finally, the emotional component to it, which is, yes, the juicy pizza that, you kind of want, but also maybe just the fun that you can have on that journey. I mean, both the metaphorical journey, but actually the physical journey as well, the journey between, you know, the Domino's store and your home.
It's funny you bring them up. I recall a few years back, they had introduced an app, Domino's did, on the Xbox console. And at the time there was, you know, a bunch of hoopla about it where, you know, well, why would I need this? You know, and I was thinking, you know, they know who their audience is and they've obviously found a way to reach them via where they're going to be. So, you know, if I'm sitting around with friends playing Fortnite one day and, you know, hey, we get hungry, you know, it's what, a quick button press. I don't even have to reach over and pick up my phone at that point. You know, Domino's, it's right there. So that's, you know, in my mind, that is an incredible use of, you know, technology and market research and just being clever all the way around. It's going to make a splash because this is, you know, somewhat unusual to the industry in the sense that, you know, you don't see every pizza delivery company, you don't see every food company necessarily doing things like this. And it's one more place where there's, you know, a touch point that's out there that they can, you know, rapidly get customers what they want. The pothole thing kind of reminds me, well, you know, if we go to a drone future, what are the potholes of the drone space? I mean, that's kind of almost a little bit scary. I mean, is that like pigeons and crows and things like that at that point? And then it's kind of horrifying when you think about it.
Well, it's really interesting to note that essentially the likes of Google and Amazon have become aviation companies as well. I mean, that's no surprise. I mean, obviously, you know, we often think of these companies, you know, the first thought is, oh, well, they're a marketplace or they're a search company, but obviously they're multidimensional. But, you know, essentially the Federal Aviation Authority has now approved Google's drone delivery company, Wing, and they've approved them as an airline because, you know, we have to regulate. I mean, it was a very unregulated, like all these things. I think drones, I'm not an expert on drones, but obviously from the reading that I've made, it, you know, was very unregulated and people could just, you know, but essentially we're going to have to regulate a new layer of airspace because we are going to have a future where, it's there. I mean, you know, billions is being invested in drone technology and delivery services as a result of that. So, Google and Amazon won't be the first companies that will be approved by the Federal Aviation Authority as airlines. It's you know, more will come, but you're right. And then obviously we'll have a new series of potholes. We'll have trees and billboards. I mean, that'll be interesting. That's where medium and message might meet, you know. the drone that drives into the billboard. But it's an interesting point you make about the Xbox console and how, you know, Domino's intuitively embraced that as a kind of platform, a gaming platform. But, you know, what value would you place on you know, ultimately they want to sell more pizzas and want to be recognized as a brand in the mind of the consumer that's the brand for me. So you can do it via advertising. And I still believe advertising has an incredible role to play, you know, that kind of brand and anthemic advertising. But, you know, I am going to place increasing importance to solving the problem alongside it. And maybe my advertising will advertise the fact that you can now order a pizza via Xbox as opposed to, you know, borrowed interest elsewhere. So I think that's where, you know, we're getting to this point where Domino's is walking the walk. You know, every day they get up and I think they try and think about an easier, more intuitive way of reaching, you know, an ever fragmented audience.
I think when you start seeing these, well, just as an example, I'll use an example. I saw yesterday, I believe it was, that, you know, there's a new Disney Plus streaming service coming. We've all kind of been watching this, and they were announcing, okay, you're going to be able to get this with a bundle, and for the same price as your Netflix subscription, you'll now be able to get Disney Plus and ESPN Plus and Hulu. And I noticed on social media that a lot of people immediately noticed that this was not a Hulu Plus. This was, you know, ad-supported Hulu subscription with it. And the immediate question, also from myself, was, okay, great, but as a Hulu subscriber that has the no ad package, how do we get that? You know, is that a package that we can get? And it's funny because I tend to think of myself, I think sometimes as both, you know, a cord cutter first and foremost, but as somebody who takes great pains to, you know, watch programming without ads. How is everyone affected by the desire to see better advertising, but at the same time, we're kind of shifting to these platforms where we don't necessarily have to see it. And so the Domino's solution in the Xbox case here is pretty fascinating because, I mean, you know, obviously Domino's is a very well-established brand, but they figured out, okay, you know, this is kind of our way of advertising to you is every once in a while on your Xbox homepage, this app's going to pop up and it's going to say, hey, you know, if you haven't downloaded the Domino's app yet, here we are, we're Domino's, we'll give you pizza through your gaming system. But, you know, not everybody has that sort of, you know, business model where, you know, they can present something like that, or it doesn't necessarily make sense in the Xbox case, for example. How are brands going to approach these hurdles, do you think, where we want better advertising, but we want it in fewer places? And how do we, you know, sort of think around that?
Fantastic point you make. And it's obviously in the blazing headlines, we're going to see a bloodbath of communications trying to gain dominance in the, you know, the OTT space this autumn and into 2020. So it's very appropriate. So let me just start there. I think the first thing, the Netflix of this of the world, let's use them as the 800-pound gorilla in the room, have changed behavior. We've grown, I mean, obviously HBO and Showtime and premium has existed for a long time, but kind of the way in which obviously Netflix entered the market, how they've obviously gained dominance in an ad-free environment has been, you know, an inflection point in the change of behavior. Television was obviously historically always viewed as, advertising was part of it. And people were very happy, you know, actually consumers do trust brands more than they trust governments and all the rest of it. And, you know, by and large, you know, we've grown up, but there's a new generation and even the older generation has just grown. So the worry I have is that Disney Plus, HBO Now, so all of the big conglomerates, communiglomerates, let's call them communiglomerates, the Disneys, the Time Warners, these multifaceted companies are all going to have a go at establishing presence in the OTT market. And obviously, you know, they've been doing it via, you know, ESPN, and obviously HBO's got, you know, a long history. But here's my worry. Those same companies do rely on advertising. They have, you know, critical and important advertising revenues, and they may bite the hand that feeds them, because by further reinforcing this new behavior, i.e. non-advertising supported over-the-top services, that could in turn hit them in their, some of their core businesses. So Disney obviously has a huge advertising supported business, as does Time Warner, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the first worry, and how it plays out. And my disappointment in those companies, and I've been very vocal about it, is that they're not, you know, it's the second tier that's advertising supported. And I think price is going to be a really key point. So I'll take the second part of your question. How many over-the-top services can we afford? and I think that we are, you know, so I think advertising supported will play a critical role. And I certainly hope so, because obviously we're in the ad business. But I also think that the price is not inelastic. So I think there's an incredible amount of research and sensitivity going into the analysis as to what is the price point. And I think the next battleground will also be a price war, in the same way that we obviously have price wars in telecom, wireless. I mean, the good thing is that there is now going to be competition, so that's going to be great. So hopefully there'll be great quality, there'll be great choice. But ultimately, you know, Disney is going to go through multiple years of managing expectations of Wall Street, because this is going to be incredibly costly, not just production budgets of high quality content, but obviously marketing on driving subscriptions. But at what price? So I think what we're seeing play out is, you know, the role of, you know, Hulu ad-supported product in a portfolio that would include, you know, powerhouse sports, which is very important to a lot of consumers, and what it's probably the one thing in many households that stops people cutting the cable, and Disney Plus. So I think it's about the repertoire that will go on. And of course, what we will have is eventually we will definitely have, you know, the second wave of Disney Plus will be advertising supported as well. But, you know, my worry was that obviously what they're doing is, in most of these instances, they're going out and will spend tens and hundreds of millions of marketing dollars educating consumers into a non-ad supported platform, which is, you know, a bit of a concern. So I think that's the second part of the question. I think how those bundles are going to work are going to be really interesting. And we haven't talked about, you know, Pluto TV or, you know, other players that will, you know, enter into this. And I think depending on what you want, when you want it, and how you want it, you know, we're going to have, you know, just ever-increasing choice. What's going to be good, though, I think, is just the quality of the product. And, you know, I don't know how long it's sustainable, but, you know, we all know that Netflix is upping the ante, spending even more now on production content, because they're going to, you know, they're going to lose quite a lot of product from their library, which will be pulled back into, you know, each of the communiconglomerates, you know, portfolios. But it's a big, big topic. But yeah, I mean, I think that that again speaks to, we're going to live in a world where there may be a move over the next few years to even more people that will cut the cable and won't necessarily be in a kind of linear, you know, advertising supported marketplace. So we're going to have to, you know, that's where I think the thesis of solving problems and, you know, kind of new and unique partnerships, that how those partnerships will manifest. And hopefully they will manifest between brand and media company, but in different ways. There will be different definitions of what that content that we deliver to consumers will, you know, what purpose it will serve.
Kind of coming full circle without even intending to, one of the earlier things we had talked about was, you know, solving problems and, you know, how technology can do that for us. And one of the problems, and it's, you know, kind of a non-problem problem, but one of the things I frequently think of is, you know, one of my biggest issues is I forget over time how many things like this I subscribe to, be it news sources, be it streaming services, be it online cloud storage, what have you. And what I really need is a solution that keeps track of all of my solutions.
No, I do think we're moving to a world where that will be the next battleground. I think will be the kind of, you know, we had the battleground of the universal remote, and in fact, you know, I love brands that are, you know, trying to figure that out. Let alone your passwords, but now we obviously have ways in which you can kind of manage with, you know, a very high level of security. So you're doing it for security reasons, but, you know, we live, again, how can you remember every password that you've created for every, you know, everything requires a password now, doesn't it, in a digital age? I mean, you know, I've got thousands and, you know, but, you know, the universal remote is going to be a really interesting battleground of the future, you know, how you can kind of manage all these different services. What's the interface to all these different services, you know, because that's the other interesting thing is, you know, where Netflix, I think, has won the battle to date is also they just have an incredibly good user interface. It's very addictive. It's very intuitive. It just, you know, the and of course, it's very bingeable. You know, the idea that as the one. And you don't even call them episodes. They seamlessly kind of go from one to the other. Yes, the algorithm, I think, we all can be a bit critical of the algorithm. Is it just serving, you know, where's the serendipity in the discovery process? But what I was going to say is, you know, their interface is, you know, head and shoulders above the others. And I think that, you know, when you go to an Amazon, you realize it's clunkier. And certainly when you go to a cable interface, you know, we now think of that as being in the dark ages because, it, you know, it's so much more clunky. And unfortunately, you know, this is I'll come to this point later on, but I do think technology is also making us lazier. And, you know, yes, it's making, you know, it's doing so much more for us that we used to have to do ourselves. And now we're kind of, you know, I wonder whether it's turning us into more impatient people as humans because everything is so on demand and is so intuitive and so fast. And so I'm now evolving it to another topic is, you know, the extent to which all of this is impacting us in our daily, you know, discourses as just human beings. But that's a much more profound statement. I've suddenly jumped from, you know, Netflix interfaces to, you know, whether it's making us more impatient as humans. But that's maybe the downside. I mean, but sorry, I made that big leap. But, you know, I do worry about that in parallel. I worry about, you know, the extent to which, you know, our expectations of human service in a retail environment have now got unrealistic. And, you know, it's so obviously that's also happening. We've got the battleground of obviously online consumerism versus obviously offline consumerism. But, you know, a lot of people are now saying, well, I just prefer not to go into the store because I don't have to interact with a human being. and, you know, when they don't have, you know, if they don't have the product, I'm really disappointed. Well, you know, of course, online, you've got, you know, a warehouse that's, you know, infinite, whereas, you know, a retail store, you know, on your high street, you know, only has so much that they can store behind, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I digress a bit.
It does bring up an interesting parallel, though. I mean, if you really think about the idea of technology providing increasing amounts of instant gratification, be it shopping or being social. If I'm the person who is shopping on Amazon, but you know, because I really don't like interacting with people, but then my idea of interacting with people is to turn around and send out some tweets of varying degrees of social value. That's kind of rooted in the same thing, and in a way, somewhat, I think you could make the argument that a certain amount of it is rooted in laziness, and technology has enabled us to do that. So I think it's an important comparison to make that, you know, these same behaviors that are fueled by impatience are having ramifications that aren't just immediate to brands with products. It's also, you know, kind of the whole social landscape that's affected by it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. The digital age is such a small blip in the continuum of us as, you know, human beings. And obviously how, but I think what's been so profound is seeing these behavior shifts in such short periods of time. You know, I mentioned the 2/3 of consumers that, you know, that are of communications that used to be kind of brand driven a decade or so ago. You know, in that decade, we've seen such profound change, but we have absolutely no idea of the societal impact of social media. I mean, there are obviously studies being undertaken, you know, but what we are seeing is certain trends. You know, yes, we're seeing, you know, more anxiety we're in society, and particularly amongst youth. We're seeing more depression. We're seeing, you know, the downside, and I wouldn't say it's just about social platforms. It's obviously many factors, but, you know, contribution must be the way we communicate as human beings. And, you know, another point that we were talking about is, you know, the convenience factor. You know, it's great. I do love my Amazon Prime account. I love the ability to shop where I want, when I want, how I want. But equally, you know, what are you losing? You're losing some of that human contact and the experience contact. So I think one trend that is going to be interesting in the future will also be the kind of, and we touched on this right at the beginning of the conversation, the kind of emotional void in digital. I mean, digital is haptic and it's visual largely. So I think in that environment, I'm seeing an incredible trend to experiential. So live events, people wanting to gather to, you know, I mean, the, you know, definition of a festival today is so broad. I mean, we used to have kind of music festivals. Now we have multivariant, you know, it's not just music, it's food, it's culture, it's, you know, we've got intellectual, you know, what I think we will see is that, you know, I'm a great believer that there is always a balancing that the human condition has. So if we push a bit too far in one direction, we'll correct ourselves. And I think the need for people to have human contact is still really critical. So yes, digital has become omnipresent in our lives. Technology has become omnipresent in our lives. But I think the experiences, so people who can figure out the digital and the physical are going to be the brands that, and, you know, the companies that kind of succeed in the future. So I actually have faith. So as much as I think we can be doomsayers about, you know, the societal impact of platforms and technology, etc., I do think that humans have just been the ultimate adaptable species on Earth, and I think we will adapt to those technologies. We will adapt, and what we, you know, we will find ways, but they may be new ways of actually gathering and being physical, you know, in combination with the digital. How it plays out, obviously, in business models is obviously, you know, at the heart of a lot of analyst reports, at the heart of a lot of, you know, forecasters, researchers, you know, brand marketeers, businessmen and women, because everything's been upended. You know, the retail environment's being upended by, you know, online. You know, brands, you know, legacy brands are being disrupted by DTC. Media companies, as we knew them, are morphing into new kinds of media companies. There are new entrants that have scaled in a decade. Isn't it, you know, and to kind of end this part of it, isn't it interesting that Disney, who, you know, have been growing and growing, acquired for $70+ billion, you know, Fox Studios and some of the Fox Cable Net entities, and the kind of depth and breadth of a Disney, you know, when you think of the assets they've got, isn't it kind of interesting to note that its market cap is less than Netflix? it's kind of crazy to think that, isn't it? But it's kind of true.
Well, yeah, and Disney actually, you know, they tick a lot more of those boxes when you think about it. You know, I mean, they have so many, you know, physical parks everywhere. They have so much product on, you know, store shelves, or virtual or not, you know, Amazon store shelves. And then they have their entire media section. Whereas, you know, you don't see any of that with Netflix, which is in turn interesting because, you know, when I think of, you know, who are the ultimate disruptors of the past decade or so, I mean, you know, Netflix is quite high on that list. I mean, they upended that entire, you know, the idea of the video rental store and, you know, all of, you know, Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and all of those. So it's, the future is definitely interesting in terms of just the disruption alone. It's almost as though the disruptive technologies and companies and brands that we've seen are ripe for disruption themselves.
Yeah.
You know, as we're kind of running out of time here, I did want to come back to my my initial kind of question to you. It wasn't even a question. It was kind of a, you know, normally I'm asked, you know, why aren't we predicting the future here? So I'll give you a choice of one of two questions. You can either give a bold prediction or tell me a real world problem you have right now that's not been addressed by a technology that you would love to see addressed.
That's great. Well, we touched on this earlier. We live in a world of digital passwords. So I would say one real world issue is how can you make me safe while at the same time allowing me to have 1,000 passwords that, you know, I can intuitively just, it keeps me in my flow. How many times do I have to stop and remember and kind of figure out or reset my password? So that would be a real world problem. It would be the, you know, and actually, God bless Google. I was at Google Zeitgeist last year and they have a product which can be kind of, you know, they're working on it. They have a product which is a universal. So there are companies doing it, but you know, so obviously it is an issue. So that's one. I think that would be my one. I could go on with a few others, but I think that one's one that, you know, every day we're seeing hackers infiltrating and stealing sensitive information. That's going to get worse in the future. That's my prediction. So, you know, that's the downside of obviously living digitally. Who do you trust in this world? I mean, some of the largest corporations have been hacked and information stolen, and you know, there seems to be little recourse. But also we live in a world where we're more trusting of obviously online commerce, giving our information away, and we haven't even got to you know, the issue of privacy, but we'll save that to another podcast.
Definitely. Well, Paul, thanks for you know, being on the show. I look forward to your presentation at Advertising Week New York, and yeah, this has been a great conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard, and thanks Advertising Week. You know, it's great to be a partner of yours.